Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
On to Tongagullan. It's one of the feeder streams that goes into one of the main living areas in the burn itself. So we're going down the streamway here. On the inside, you've got a set of thermals, which you'll wear, a full set of thermals. Outside, like what I'm wearing here is neoprene socks, and they go just above my knees, just to keep my feet warm. The levels of water in caves just tend not to be very high in Ireland. And also, it makes it more easy to move around with rather than wearing a full neoprene suit. So outside of that, then I wear a furry suit, which is made of fleece. And outside that again, then I've got a PVC suit, which keeps me partially warm from, and also is dry as well from the drips and that, and some of the flow of water that will be coming down. I wear rubber gloves. I wear knee pads to keep my knees from getting hurt when I'm on my knees. And also I wear Wellington boots as well. On my head, then I've got a helmet, and on my helmet I've got a lamp. In this particular case, I have an electric lamp, and it has an LED bulb and also has an incandescent bulb as well. And they're worked off of a battery, which I have on the side of me here, which I carry on a belt. And this battery here will give me about 11 hours of light, though with the LEDs, I probably get a lot more than that. I'd never actually checked on that. But normally, the sort of caving you do in Ireland, you do in probably 3, 4, 5 hours, so you're not really stretching the battery at all. As you go down through, this is a very vertical section. In fact, a lot of the caves here in the burn are vertical form, and that's where the water has seeped down through the cracks in the limestone, and it's eroded it away, and dissolved it away. In fact, because it's the acid in the water coming down through the ground, which it picks up through the atmosphere and that, and also in the grasses above it, and that make it very acidic. And of course, limestone is alkaline, and so you find the reaction between the acid and the alkaline causes the alkaline rock to dissolve, and forms these caves here, these vertical cave systems. This would be typical of a cave in Clare, where you get a lot of vertical features, a long sort of canyon passage and that sort of thing as well. And the limestone here, and all the fossils that are formed, you can see there the sponges that would have been there many, many, many millions of years ago and been laid down and are of much hard rock. And they're almost forming like little ledges that are coming out from the side of the cave as well. And sometimes we as cavers would use these to navigate through the caves and be able to stand on them and walk along them as well. Because they're much, much harder than the surrounding limestone. They stick out a lot more. That's because of the high silica content in them. The height here, where the cave we're in at the moment, is about 4 meters high. But you can get caves that are very much higher than this, maybe 15, 20, 25, 30 meters in terms of passageway. But we'll be going on. You'll find that the cave varies enormously as we go through it, and we get much greater variation in height and even in width as well.
Flood debris. There's been just caught on a section of rock, twigs and brambles and bits of ferns off of the pine needles off the trees in the forest.
Well, sometimes happens here as well. You see them up in the roof of the cave, and it's indicative of the height that the water can get to in a flood condition. So it's not a place you want to be when it's raining outside or where the high water levels inside. And there have been cases of people being caught inside in caves and that as well, for periods until the water levels subside and they can get back out again. We're quite lucky here in Clare because there are most of the caves that are well known, and where there is a flood hazard, that will be well known as well, and just to stay out of those particular areas. And normally cavers wouldn't go into them in situations like that anyway, only the unsuspecting. As the water passes over the rock, it has little eddy currents close by the rock itself, and it starts to erode and starts to dissolve the rock away. And it gives you a sort of a scalloping effect. And that's right across it, not just below us here, but on the walls as well around us. And sometimes you even get it in the roof, where the water has been lapping against the roof for quite a while as well.
And if there was no water flowing here, you'd be able to tell from looking at these the direction the water was flowing.
The vast majority of the water in the burn area flows underground. In fact, there's only about 2 surface rivers in the burn itself, and even there, they can be associated with caves themselves. But the vast majority of the water flows underground. And so it's quite a wet region, very active in terms of cave development, and the caves are still developing even here.
A strange way to spend a Sunday afternoon splashing around in water in the dark.
Well, the question is simple. I think people start caving out of curiosity, and they usually go with a youth group or something like that, or scouts or whatever. And most people that cave once, and once only. And they get wet and they get cold, and they come out and they say, "That was great, I've done it." It's a bit like bungee jumping, I don't ever want to do it again. But some people get caught onto the adventure. Now, you know, it depends who's led you on your first trip as to whether you've got adventure out of it or just cold and wet and miserable. So that's the trick, is to inspire some adventure in them the first time out. So people who go a second and a third time, the adventure is probably what's driving them, the adrenaline and the sport. After that, once that starts to wear off, people start to take an interest in the cave life, in exploring caves, in discovering new caves, in digging through boulder chokes and finding places where nobody's ever been before. Geology, photography, all the sort of different things that happen. But you're down to 10% of the people that have ever caved that ever go beyond three or four times, I would think.
But it's one of these things that very much dependent upon your first experiences of it. You know, if you were brought into a cave which was particularly grueling or very, very wet and you weren't ready for it or you weren't dressed for it and that sort of thing, that really has a big impact probably on the way in which you approach caving at a later stage.
My goal is to sit with the lads on that and moving on from three or four trips, maybe if you're introduced to vertical features where you're doing ladder work or single rope technique, where it's an extra challenge, more adventure, but just leads on from there.
Caving in itself is only dangerous if you don't understand the cave, you don't understand the risks, and you go into the wrong cave at the wrong time when it's going to flood, or you try vertical features without the right equipment and the right safety and so on. But the thing is that one of the deepest caves in Ireland is, how deep is Paul Nagain?
It's 183 metres.
183 metres deep, discovered in the last 15, 20 years. And so there's more discoveries out there to be made in the Burren, and exciting discoveries, and relatively easy. Where we are now, we're at the top of Upper Paul Nagain, and the passage divides into what's called Short Gallery and Long Gallery. A Short Gallery, you can walk to the end of it, and there's a little stream issues from a boulder choke. And we know that connects to another stream called, what is it, E1 or E2. So if we could dig our way through there, that would make the longest through trip, where you go in one entrance and out the other in Ireland. And that would be about something like 5 or 6 kilometres, which is quite a long way in Ireland. The other passage, Long Gallery, is extremely tight and tortuous. And I would guess that there's probably no more than 20 or 30 people ever been through there. And none of them more than skinny, you know. So we had a fierce battle to get through there, and we had to survey it in the last couple of years. But very adventurous passage, and there's a lot of adrenaline pumping when you're in places like that. It's a lonely spot, and you're relying on yourselves and your fitness and your ingenuity. So, yeah.
We call them collector's items. You go in, you take a good look around as you're coming back out again, because you probably won't be back in there again.
You say goodbye.
You've done that, they've got the scratches.
This is the first heap of glowstone we've seen, and what it is it's calcite that has deposited on the wall, and it gives us this sort of, in this case it's like a browny white colour. The calcite is normally a white colour, but the brown colour comes from minerals that have come down from the surface, and this could be an iron oxide or something like that. But even here you can see some little insects here that have flown in from the surface and are walking along the wall. So because you get moisture coming down here, and it's actually an amount of water that's flowing over the surface, with that then you'd have some foodstuffs that would be coming in here as well. So you find some insects that might find their way in here, and there is a sort of a chain that you find where other animals or insects will come in to feed on these. In fact, you can find some frogs in lots of caves that are feeding quite happily down here. Mind you, they might have a difficulty in trying to get back out again, but they are living down here.
step from there over to that ledge in the Bible.
This again is like the flowstone that we saw earlier, but these now have, they're much more fluted. In fact, they are forming limestone curtains, what we call curtains. And even at the end here, you can see some what we call pig's ears, because they just take that shape.
They're like seashells.
They are, but they I suppose they look like that, yes, and where they're curved over here particularly. But they can hang on their own as well, and that's where you get this pig's ear effect.
Cave has changed dramatically to about 10 metres above our head.
There's no opening up there.
No. No way to the surface there.
And here again, Peter, we have some even more formations here. This is again the flowstone that we've seen before, but down here we've got these. What these look like, it's like a little mini landscape of paddy fields that the water has moved down over this rock. It's formed little calcite dams, and these dams are holding back the water. And sometimes inside in these, in fact, you'll get what we call cave pearls, and basically they're a little bit of silica or some little bit of sand that's come down, and the calcite starts to form on them, and as they get rolled by the water, it can actually form small little balls that look to be called cave pearls. There's not any of those here particularly, but we do see these little cauliflower effects, and again our calcite has it been worn. The flow isn't particularly great here, but it looks like a little scene from Southeast Asia or something like that, doesn't it? With all these little
the best way to describe it is like terrace fields. Like the tea plantations that you'd see in India.
Yeah, that's right. Or even paddy fields in Malaysia and places like that as well.
But there's a bit of this that would remind me of the seashore.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the rock pools that you get on the seashore, and that you can do that as well, where the action of the water on the rocks themselves. But what this is in fact, is the water as it comes in here has a calcite in it, and that calcite begins to be deposited, and it forms these little dams here. So these pools are being formed by the calcite that's in the water itself and being left behind, rather than the erosion effect that you're talking about in the sea, where the rock gets worn away and pools are left behind.
Guys, don't see any particularly special.
What earth one, look.
See, it looks like the spine of an animal, but in fact it's a piece of seaweed, effectively.
Yeah.
Another one nearer, hanging all the way through. The age of this rock is what, 250 million years, something like that. Yeah. So they're quite old.
There's a frog I was talking to you about earlier, Peter. This is a fella. He'd been... He probably started life inside here, possibly, and it had to be able to live on what gets washed into the cave as well. So there
you go. These are very, very delicate, though, because the side walls of these gourds are very, very thin, which is why we don't tend to bring too many people in here, because one person put a hand on that, and it's broken, and it's gone forever.
Mm-hmm. Tend to wear gloves inside here, and this is to do two things: to protect your hands, but also to protect the calcite formations.
because the natural oils in your skin, if they get on that, that can actually hinder the growth of the formations themselves.
The alien to them.
Mm-hmm. So these are the pools here that we were talking about, are called Gower pools. I don't know why they're given that name, do you know? See some of the fossils here on the wall. See the star-shaped fossil here. There's some here as well.
Circular type crinoids.
The crinoids, that's right. And so you find, I mean, not on all caves walls will you see them so easily. And so if you splash a little bit of water on it here and rub it, you see there the star. It almost like the bottom of a mushroom, the underside of a mushroom there. And that would have been early plant life. And that has found its way to the bottom of the sea, gets compressed, and formed the limestone that we have today. Over nearly all of Ireland, in fact, I think the only county you're able to find, to not find limestone, is Wicklow, County Wicklow, which is predominantly granite. But you've got limestone under most of Ireland, and so there's potential there for caves in a lot of different areas. Okay.
This is very low ceiling here.
You can see the turt layer again.
Yeah, we've got a turt layer above us this time. And you can see the limestone actually through it in patches where the turt is broken away. So the turt is a blacky colour. And also you can see some...
high silica content.
Yeah, the high silica content in it. And you can see the beads of moisture in it. And there's even down here, in the low light that we have here, you can see these green patches as well. Almost like a lichen that's growing down here, very low light.
It's something living.
Yeah, that's right. So even down here in probably almost like a sterile environment, you still find something constantly eroding away, constantly dissolving. And what happens over a very, very long period of time, we wouldn't probably notice much change in our lifetime at all. Carry on.
Was 18 something, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. A lot of, in fact, if you look at a lot of the caves in the Burn were originally looked at by the Bristol Speleological Society from the University of Bristol. And they mapped a lot of the caves and around here. And it was they really who, I suppose, set off caving in Ireland. Caving wouldn't have been very popular before that period of time at all.
Coleman wrote a book,
more accessible.
Well, Coleman wrote a book of all the caves all over Ireland, but he really only wrote about the big ones and the popular ones. Mm. And then Martel came to Ireland at some stage in the 19th century, didn't he?
He was a famous French caver, yeah. Did a lot of work. In fact, did a lot of work in Marble Arch system and that in Northern Ireland and Fermanagh. So there's been a lot of research done through the years, but I suppose it would have been fairies and banshees that would have kept people out of caves in Ireland, and it was just the fear of the unknown and the possibility that it was a gateway to the other world, you know. Yeah, the Caves of the Wild Horses, which is in Kilcorny, which is just above Ballyvaughan. That those caves there, lovely, lovely caves, but nobody would really go in there. And supposedly one night there was somebody saw some wild white horses come out of there, from which it got its name, the Caves of the Wild Horses.
Yes, that's an interesting cave system because it's got no stream going into the entrance normally, and there's an underground river system somewhere connected to that. Although we haven't found it, nobody's found it yet. But when there's a big flood up on the mountains, the water going through that underground cave system on its way down towards Corrifin would rise the water level, and the cave would start to flood from the bottom up. So all the air in the cave comes out through the entrance, which is quite small. So you could almost imagine there'd be a situation as the water reached the cave entrance where there's still a lot of trapped air, rather like in a lemonade bottle, and water coming out at the same time. I could imagine it would spray out, and that might be where that story came from as well, because it certainly makes a wailing noise, doesn't it?
And you've got white horses in the sea as well.
And white horses in the sea, yeah. So there could be that kind of effect as all the water from the bushing out.
You begin to use all of your body to move around. That'd be your elbows, your knees. You tend to weight with your body as well as you're going through. And over time, you develop a sort of a system, I suppose, of being able to move in the cave more fluidly. And that, and that's probably, you know, we probably are no fitter than yourself, really. But what we have developed over the years is a way in which to move in a cave. With confidence as well, and so, because we wouldn't have maybe the same apprehension as you would have coming through it for the first time, you know. So I think that makes the difference. There are sections of this cave which are very, very, very big. You know, could be 5 meters, 6 meters across.
Big enough for a double-decker bus.
Yeah, absolutely. But then there are sections as well that are narrow. And I think what you find with claustrophobia, people with claustrophobia, one. They wouldn't come near it, but those that would come near it would find solace and security in other people around and with them at the time, and it's a matter of just giving them support.
Yeah, but I've only had the experience once of somebody turning back the cave entrance, and we've taken a number of people underground, and only once.
And that could have been a fear of many things. It's just a fear of the unknown. In
it
many
could have
cases.
Been even just crossing the bog into the cave.
Yeah.
Probably one of the biggest areas within this streamway.
It's an Avon, and we've been.
It's a what?
An Avon, it's called. Probably getting its name from the Church Avon. Large area, lots of stalactite formations, lots of cauliflower formations on the roof there. Given that name because they look just like cauliflower. And you can also see right next to it, then you can see these very unusual shapes in the ceiling. And they were formed by water lapping up against the surface, the undersurface, eroding it away preferentially in different places. And so you get these weird and wonderful shapes on the surface of the ceiling.
It's the first time you can stand straight up for a while.
It is indeed, yeah.
Well, back where our data logger is, the roof is actually 12 metres above us. So, you know,
yeah.
You don't feel that height.
No, because you're contorted this sideways.
Yeah, yeah. But in fact, it's quite a long way off. Okay. It's quite pretty the next section.
You can see the way the passageway contours around. And what you're seeing here really is it's like a river underground, and so you get your oxbow formations, and that's just like you would in on the surface. And you've got dry sections of cave, like here now, we're in a very dry section of the cave, and we're just after leaving the streamway, and that's gone off into another direction, but we'll regain it again afterwards. So we're in an oxbow at the moment.
You can feel a slight bit of a draft here as well. It's a bit cooler than where we were.
Yeah. Yeah, so you've got the air that's been passed through, channeled through the cave, it's been a thinner area, yeah, you get a Venturi effect, and it passes on through at a much faster rate here. And so also, but also, as you can see there, this little cobweb here is blowing in the wind. That's what we see it there.
Yeah.
And then, so this could also be indicative of that there's an entrance quite close as well. So you get new air coming into the cave, and so you'd have a warm air and cold air coming together.
And it's really the first time we've been out of water.
It is indeed, yeah. So you've got this shady sort of, almost a gravelly-like material on the base.
Not for long, though.
So the cave canyon sort of meanders around here. And that's what we're doing, we're just meandering around. It's quite narrow, it's only about a foot and a half wide at this stage, but constantly going down, further down, as we go further underground.
You might have noticed Tom goes at the front. Yeah. And this is because this particular cave is famous. Absolutely famous because of the cat spiders. Now, cat spiders are rare enough in the Burren, but you do find them in this cave. And they live off cats. And as you can imagine, you don't normally see many cats in the cave. So these guys are generally pretty hungry. Whenever they see anything moving, they go for it. So that's why we put Tom at the front. He's well used to beating them off. Okay, Tom, move on.
Just making a small building to about a 3-metre crawl, which doesn't look like the obvious way on because there's a big passage to our left, but it is the crawl. It's just a short crawl, and there's about a metre and a half of a climb down at the end of it. So bear with the noise and the grunting as we get through this.
We'll make sure you leave Tom go through first because the cat spider's dangerous. Dangerous.
You swing around there, I'll stick a feed in there so that you can pass the microphone to you. And you can grab it from there.
You okay?
Aye.
Unfortunately, the way on is the lower section to my right now.
Worse. You can see here why we sometimes wear knee pads here.
If you have a bike gun over that rock, you won't get wedged.
Right.
Over to get wedged. Be careful where you're stepping. There's a big hole here.
When you come here in a moderate flood, there's water coming in through this streamway here, and where we've just come down, it's coming through there 2 or 3 inches deep. So when you come in here from below, the whole place is really loud, you know, sort of roar of waterfalls, and it's quite dramatic. Today it's very, very quiet, so if we're all just really quiet. All cavers would say never cave alone, okay? And the reason is that really for anybody that's less than very experienced, it's not good. You always reckon if you sit very, very quietly and you just listen, the first thing you hear are the drips and the stream moving. But if you think about it, the stream should be fairly regular. So if it's making a little tinkle, tinkle, tinkle noise, it should be fairly constant. But there's always a pebble that moves suddenly for no reason. And as you sit there quietly listening, you think you can hear voices. And you think, well, that's nice. There's a group coming along with a leader. Perhaps there are some scouts or some young people from an outdoor education centre. And you listen some more and you can always hear them. You can never make out what they're saying. And they don't seem to be getting any closer. They're like murmurs.
And when we bring young people underground, students and so on, we always tell them that it's the souls of lost children. And that usually shuts them up and keeps them together. They don't wander off after that. But it can be quite disturbing if you're not used to it. But generally, as a rule, I would say to everybody, don't go underground alone.
Very small amount of water at the very bottom here. It's very narrow, and all the time we're going down. Here's a series of steps coming down. We're all the time getting closer to what would be termed as the exit out of this cave.
Feel it in your face, but the air is getting colder again.
Yeah.
And we can see daylight just above our heads.
A fairly severe drop here. Watch yourself.
Yeah, I'm alright.
You can use your body as a
wedge.
A wedge, yes. You can see here as the sunlight comes through the roof of the cave here.
This is the end of the line. That's the Palnagullum main entrance. In flood conditions, you'd normally see water. If you were going into the system, you'd be dropping underneath a waterfall, which would be coming out of this river. You'd walk in underneath it to go into the system.
So we're looking out into the secondary pot here in Palnagullum. The main pot is in this area up here,
yeah.
And there's a secondary pot down here. But normally in flood conditions you'd have water thundering out of here, and we wouldn't be able to stand where we are now at the moment at all. You see all the mosses that are growing on the wall, ferns and that as well. A lot of plants kind of like this sort of moist
just
environment.
Up here is another passage that we could come out, which is called Baker's Rift, which brings us out in and looks over the same thing. It's just a small different tributary.
The story goes that the R.R. Tolkien, who wrote Lord of the Rings, was supposed to have holidayed quite regularly in Fëanor, which is just below us here on the coastline of Clare, looking out into Galway Bay. And he heard seemingly about Palnagullum. Now, Palnagullum means the hole of the doves. But Gollum he was fascinated by, and used the name supposedly in his trilogy for Gollum, the cave dweller. That's how he supposedly got his name.
Have you any of you ever been in one of these where you didn't think you'd see daylight?
I've actually had a group in this cave before, and bring them out, and when you get to the pot, there's another entrance at the far side. And the group continued out, got as far as here, went through the little crawl and continued into the cave again, not realising they were outside.
Yeah.
It was just night. One of those black nights.
There definitely are sections of this cave, of the Palnagullum cave, where it would be quite easy to get lost in, particularly in the lower reaches of the cave, which is an area called the Maze. And in the past we've had people who have been lost inside there, and the Irish Cave Rescue have had to go in there and to bring them back out again.
to smell the area here before we go back out. And when you get back out onto the surface, smell the air and the feel of the air, and you'll see the big difference between the air in here and the air outside.
Here, if you came down, all those hours ago.
All those hours ago, right?
So the trick is to go back up again, and like all good things, we've kept the worst to last.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.